October 10th, 2019, Town Board Special Meeting regarding zoning changes at 6:30 p.m.
We gave the planning discussion, so now they come, they're going to have to read us later. Thank you everybody for coming. And I have to give kudos to the zoning board and planning board members. This was actually their idea. They thought it would be a good idea for us to have, you know, a general workshop session before actual pen got to paper about the zoning revision. So I think that's a wonderful idea. The more dialogue on this kind of a topic, the better off I think the final product will be. So I'm certainly welcoming to that. So that's why we called this kind of unique joint meeting for town board members, planning board members, and zoning board members. And we have a smattering of them here tonight from each of the boards. So thanks for coming. And I normally have an agenda, but the agenda for this meeting is very simple, so I didn't bother to print it. And that is, I just want your general thoughts and impressions about the current code, what you like about it, what could be made better, obviously, because that's what we're looking to do. Because after this meeting is held, we're going to start, or I'm going to start putting pen to paper to start that revision process. And I did have a couple of handouts for you to just get the thought processes started. The other thing I should encourage you to do, there is a copy of the recently adopted town plan on the town's website. If you've not seen it, I encourage you to go and read that document. There is one being passed around right now. I have another hard copy of that. It's downloadable. It's a PDF. It's easy to download and read and make selected pages, print out selected pages if you want or whatever. But I would encourage you to read that as you think about suggested zoning changes in the overall character of the town. And it's a good reference document, period, anyhow, for a lot of different things. So, with that said, I did have a couple of handouts about the zoning process, some general principles that I like to follow in starting this type of a thing. First of all, the expected time frame. These things take time, and they need to take time. This is not something that you want to rush. I think 12 to 15 months is a fair time frame. It could push from that a little bit depending on how things go, but the process that we're going to employ in terms of involvement is certainly the public is welcome to interject any time. I'm here 2 days a week in Town Hall, Tuesday mornings 9 to 1, and Thursday afternoons 1 to 4. You're welcome to stop in and see me anytime. If you have a thought you want to share, or if your neighbors do, or something like that, by all means, come in and see me. Or you can email me, call me, whatever's convenient for you. I think this will take, 12 to 15 months. And this is something that, it's a code that really needs a lot of help, I think. It's quite old. It's serving the community well, and it has served the community well. And I was saying to one of the attendees here just earlier, do I think there's going to be wholesale changes to the districting and the districts themselves and all that? No. In my opinion, I don't think that's needed. I think the land use pattern in the town is established, it's set, it's what people are used to, and that land use pattern can also accommodate reasonable, managed growth in terms of the economy and the population and all that. And it is also a land use pattern that everybody's used to. So I think that works well. I don't see where there's going to be wholesale changes to district boundaries. This is the current zoning map, and that reflects the districts that we have now. And it's your typical pattern of basically residential, commercial, and industrial, with some institutional allowed for here and there. And it does accommodate agricultural uses, which is very important to this particular community. We have a significant ag district here that's reflected in mostly in our R5 district, but it is also a designated county ag district. And that's important. It has a lot of weight in state law as an ag district. And I'm coming to find out the details of that, actually. But it does have a lot of importance in the land use pattern, particularly in the south central portions of the town. So that is something that, you know, I expect it is certainly going to continue, be reinforced, encouraged, protected, and preserved. In terms of commercial uses, that's a classic example of a land use pattern that developed over time, and it basically followed the car. And I don't think that's a bad thing. You'll hear a lot of land use planners going on and on about how we don't need the car. Well, you do. And this is, you know, this is our primary commercial corridor here in Route 9, and it followed that development pattern. And if you look at what, you know, the big macro planning that was talked, that I think was envisioned for this region, this is a cloverleaf on the Northway. A cloverleaf in transportation planning is a highly, it's a transportation feature that has a lot of capacity. So you can tell that the transportation planners, when they set out the Northway, given the fact that this interstate now is going to cross what was the primary north-south route for this part of the state, they thought this is where they were going to have to accommodate a lot of cars. They built a big piece of infrastructure there, and they thought this was going to be the where development followed. And it did to some degree. But a lot of it also went to 18 and 19 and even up around Lake George. So this is now currently being looked at by DOT for reconfiguration and essentially removal of that cloverleaf. Nothing's been set yet, but there are some preliminary plans. So the commercial uses track of that corridor, as you would expect. We do have some industry, you know, at either end, which I think is important to accommodate. And we have increasing amounts of conservation and preservation as well. For example, I think OSI is closed on this large piece of property here on the river that's eventually going to connect into the park, hopefully the state park. So those are some things that we need to look at in terms of the zoning that's consistent with that, and is that something we want to encourage and go in that direction. And then the residential uses, that is our number one land use. It takes up both in terms of the number of parcels, well, I shouldn't say acres, because acres with the ag really picks up a lot down here. If you consider this, it's a residential zone, but there's a heavy ag concentration in this area, but certainly by the number of parcels, residential is our number one land use. And there is a lot of very nice, welcoming, attractive neighborhoods that people like to live in. Some people have been here for generations, and that's a great thing. And so in zoning, you really want to try and instill a zoning plan that is going to look to maintain the integrity, if you will, of that residential use. So we want to try and protect that, and in certain ways it can be actually encouraged. The other couple of topics that have been hot button issues, solar, that's got to be accommodated, and it may be on the track that it is a regulation that goes on its separate development and then is inserted into this code. And I think it should certainly be a part of zoning, but we have to be careful because, you know, again, the ag uses and the residential uses are things that, you know, we heard in the comp plan process. As we develop our comp plan, those are important attributes. So we want to make sure that solar doesn't conflict with that. And you see a lot of instances across the region, not just here in Saratoga County, even in all Lake County. You know, there's a really big push by the providers of these large solar arrays to come into the communities and expand. And, you know, we all want reasonable, sustainable, affordable energy, but on the other hand, we can't be messing with, you know, the fundamental attributes of our land use pattern, so we've got to be careful about solar. So that'll be a real discussion. The other thing is multifamily housing. Multifamily housing is a large concentration of our residential use. The numbers are in the comp plan. I forget what the exact numbers are, but it constitutes a significant amount of our residential offering, and as it should. You know, a balanced residential plan for a community reflects single-family, duplexes, if you will, and multifamily attached, you know, multiplex housing. A robust housing offering will cover a lot of considerations like affordability, different lifestyles people like to lead. Some people, you know, prefer having a single family home and maybe some space around them. Others prefer to be in a multiplex, low maintenance situation. And Moreau's in a situation in our town accommodates all that. But I think on the multifamily side, in terms of land use planning, from my standpoint as a technician, I think we've done our bit for multifamily housing, if you will. There certainly is enough out there, and there's even enough in our planning right now that has been approved and not yet built, so there's a healthy inventory for us to work with. The other handout that I gave you, it's this one with the highlights on it. Structurally, the overall code, I think there's some things that are clunky in this overall code of the town that we could improve the administration, we could make it more efficient, more productive, easier to work in for the residents, easier to work in for the staff and the administrators, and easier for the board to administer. And what I've highlighted what I see as, you know, land use driven chapters in the code where they involve land use topics like, you know, burning outside, keeping of chickens, adult entertainment, fences, freshwater wetlands, junkyards, noise, hydronic heaters, and one of my all-time favorites in this particular code is signs. And all those things that are highlighted there live outside of the zoning chapter. And functionally, that creates problems. Like, for example, right now, if you cannot comply with our sign code, you're dead in the water. If you have a sign, or if you have a fence that you want to put on your property that does not meet our code, you're dead in the water. There is no appellate provision because it's not in the zoning ordinance. If it was in the zoning ordinance, you could take that opportunity to make an argument to have the fence you want before the Zoning Board of Appeals to make your case there. Right now, if you can't meet it, that's it. You just don't meet it. And it's caused a lot of problems for people coming to the office in the 3 years I've been here. So my point in highlighting these is, in my opinion, I think these are all things that need to be brought into the zoning chapter, and that way they would function together better. And you'd see an administration of a code that would be a lot more efficient, more productive. I think it would be easier for residents to understand and work with it. It's just very, and the result of something like this is not anybody's fault. It's just something that you can see that's evolved over time. You know, that the town, as these things came into vogue or they came into the culture, they try to accommodate, you know, and regulate them, so they just added another chapter. It's very understandable why it happened. But now looking back, what's happening in, I don't want to say like modern times or whatever, but a lot of communities are going to what they call unified development codes. So it's a unification of regulations that have a like purpose. So it's logical, rational thinking that so when somebody comes in for, say, a fence issue, you know, you just work within, you know, one section of the code that deals with that. It's not, you have to go to a separate chapter and all that kind of thing. It's easy to find, it's easy to understand. And I think it would be quite an undertaking, but I think now's the time to do this, is to take all these land use related chapters and pull them into one unified set of regulations, one-stop shopping, if you will. And I think that would make a lot of sense. And these are just things to consider. We can certainly keep the approach as it is, although there are some things in here that I'm going to sternly suggest that, you know, fences and signs should be in the zoning code clearly. As should, I think, mobile homes and mobile home parks. And the term of art these days is manufactured home, not mobile home. But those are the types of things I think structurally that need to be looked at. So I've given this little introductory spiel. just in the interest of trying to get, you know, your thought processes flowing and your interest peaked. And I really want to hear from you as to what you think are problems with the code. Maybe you've been into the billing office, you had an experience with the current code, maybe your neighbors have, and you have an observation you'd like to share. That's what I want to hear about and see if we can accommodate, you know, changes that will remove what you see as problems. That's what we're looking to do. So I know a lot of the board members here, they work in the code all the time, whether it's town, planning, or zoning board of appeals. You know, you guys work in this code all the time. You probably got some thoughts. So I really want to hear your input on these things, because I want to try and accommodate those certainly in the changes that are made. So I open it up. Anybody got any?
Yeah. A question, for just on process, you know, how you're going about this.
Yes.
A wholesale revision, as you say, is going to take a lot of time.
Yep.
Big investment. Has it been thought through as to whether or not the piecemeal, you know, let's say taking a more important piece at a time, might have a better success rate and might progress easier?
I understand your point, but I think I've undertaken that type of process before, and it gets complicated. And it's very easy to lose track of where you're at with things. It's really something, I think, given the needs, as I see it anyhow, I really think it's something that needs to be done, you know, covered back, you know. And I do think we can do things like, I think we're going to almost have to on the solar issue, you know, and then the mobile home, we're going to have to advance some of those topics. But within the context of the overall code, I mean, I don't want to create like doom and gloom here. I mean, this code is functioning, and I think arguably pretty well. I mean, it's got its problems, but you know, I don't think it's panic or crisis time either. I don't want to misportray this, but I do think there are going to be a couple topics, so they're going to, just by the nature of the issues swirling around them and the pressure there, I think we're going to want to advance like the solar and the multifamily. But beyond that, I think it really does need to be a wholesale, you know, one document, one change. And in the interim, we have what we have that's working, and we can continue to work with it. But I really think we can make it better. And I made the promise in front of Todd, I think we can be, you know, the example in Saratoga County of a land use regulatory system that works and is interactive and is easy for the public to understand, and it serves the community extremely well. I can envision that, it's just a matter of getting that. So, Rob.
Jim, do you envision the process playing out where you are the overall expert and writer slash creator of, you know, 100% of the subject matter, or will you be having other subject matter experts that will be supporting you in key aspects, you know, where you need to go a little deeper, whether it's solar or whether it's ag or whatever the case might be?
I'm all for bringing in outside help. I've been doing this for like 35 years or so. So I got a lot of experience in it myself. I've seen what works and what doesn't. But your point's well taken on technical aspects like solar,
yeah.
You know, stormwater could be another one. But in that regard, in terms of outside help, I think our first best resource is try to go to the state and public agencies, the county, you know, that have a lot of expertise, you know, themselves as well. Like, you know, Ag and Markets has got a ton of stuff on ag protection. You know, I think they are the experts. So I'd be resistant to, or I certainly want to well define, if we have to go out to a private resource and incur costs to do that. You know, I want to make sure that we have a well-defined scope and a well-defined need before, you know, you make the decision to incur cost. But I do think we certainly should be accessing outside help, and I think a majority of that can be accommodated in, you know, the state, county, or federal agencies.
And the follow-up I had to that was, have you participated in or been part of what you would consider a model code from another county? town or township that you hold up as an example, or key components of it as an example that we could.
I think I have. Anybody who wants to go look, it's online. Go to the Village of Saranac Lake and look at their Unified Development Code. I wrote that code. And it's what I'm talking about. They took their zoning was very old. It was dated back to the 70s there. And they passed this, I believe, in 2017, I think it was, 16. And they took their stormwater, their flood prevention, which is a real concern there, their subdivision, and all the other aspects of their, you know, the fences and signs and all that, they brought it into one unified development code. And now they've gotten started, interestingly, they have a unified development board. They have one board comprised of five people, and they do zoning and planning in one board. So you can go to that one board on one evening, have your variance heard, and your site plan review on the next application by the same five people. Now, they did it out of somewhat necessity because the Adirondack towns and villages are having increasing problems filling their boards. But it works. They've been doing that now for about 2-3 years now with that board. But any questions or comments about the overall? Yes, Mary.
What do you see for the, I don't know, it's called CEWA, the commercial river guide? Like, right now we have that big highway-related uses. Do you think you foresee missing out? Do you see just calling it commercial?
Well, I think that's a very good question, a very good topic for everybody here to discuss, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. The nature, in my opinion, this is not the 1990s anymore. I was a zoning administrator in Queensbury, for example, when the mall expanded, the Super Kmart was built, the Walmart was expanded, a lot of strip centers were expanded, and box retail, whether it was big or small, was it. It was in vogue. It was, you know, Lowe's came in, Home Depot came in, but that's all changed, and I think it's changed arguably permanently. So that's a very good question about the content of this commercial district and what it should allow for. My opinion, my first blush at this in response to your question would be to say, if we are going to have multifamily, I think we should consider the idea that multifamily goes in this corridor and stays out of the residential areas, and we have a true mixed-use corridor. Because the success appears to be, and we're seeing this at the LA Group, we're involved now on some design projects that are taking enclosed shopping malls to adaptive reuses. And what's happening with enclosed shopping malls is they're starting to see a little bit of a trend where they're transitioning over to multifamily housing and some retail. They're recasting the actual building in the multifamily units. So, I don't know. I think this area here wants to be, you know, a commercial district with entertainment, you know, certainly it, and the possibility for some higher density residential, particularly now that we have the infrastructure coming with the sewer. That may be something to consider for the commercial district. That is the response to your question. Yeah, Sandy.
There was also that corridor study done in 2014.
Yes.
And it seemed to have a lot of really sound ideas about what we could do to make Route 9 work better.
Yes.
And that the zoning law has not changed the current traffic situation on Route 9. It's only going to get worse.
Right.
So as you consider the land use development along that route, you have to consider what kind of density this roadway will carry and what kind of improvements. I mean, very interesting recommendations about reducing density of commercial so that you maintain the traffic flow and also might increase the appeal generally of that corridor for commercial purposes. You know, more accessible, just generally, primarily car, but if you have some walkability features as well, built into the planning process and regulation of that area, it may have just overall, over time, become a much more commercially attractive place to visit. I mean, right now, a lot of people skip that part of Route 9 altogether, go from 17 to 18 and so on.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that is an excellent document and should be a resource that factors into the zoning as we approach it for this corridor. And the same holds true, I should have mentioned this, for the town. The town has a farmland protection plan that will factor into the planning that's done for the ag district as well. So we have resources available to us. The town has gone through some planning exercises that are now available to us, as Ann indicated, and I'd like to, you know, build some of those ideas out of that document into the zoning to the extent that we can. It certainly should be looked at and considered as we consider the, you know, the new district for that corridor. Reed.
Continuing on that point, I guess the bottleneck becomes the village moving north through Glens Falls and keeping the flow. It gets dense, as we know, Hudson Street, Main Street, Saratoga, gets really, and it keeps people from wanting to go, continuing going north and then bypassing. And then the other thing that I'm concerned about is maybe not all of 197, but just a little bit of the western part where it hits 9, there's a lot of density of flow. I don't think once we get to 32 across, I think that can should stay, but maybe more thinking commercial, just because the flow is there going to Washington County and going towards, we can't deny, and I guess we can't put our head in the sand about that location either.
Well, in that regard, I want to make sure I get these comments in the record. These are from Kevin Ellis. He's a zoning board member who couldn't be here tonight. He has his Carlisle annual show that he's down at in Pennsylvania right now, but because he had some similar thoughts, particularly as it related to 197. The history points where, number one, designated areas for manufactured homes via overlay. He thinks we should be welcoming the manufactured home, and that might be something we want to consider. Not, you know, in a big way, but as part of the overall housing stock that's available to the community in certain areas. Two, cottage industry accommodation, home occupations with a potential tiering of that. And I have some ideas because I've written codes in the past about where I've included a tiered approach to home occupations that range from a low intensity, relatively minor home occupation to something that's a little more aggressive, maybe allowing for employees, signage, and a little bit bigger commercial footprint. And then his third idea was Reynolds Road to Route 9 to Route 32, a modest density, modest intensity of use of maybe a mixed-use commercial district of some sort for the parcel fronting on that corridor. That was the other idea he had in support of expanding the taxable base. So, and then his overall comment was that there are too many gray areas in general in the use schedules, and I think that's something we all can agree upon. I was just sharing with one of the attendees here, the classic phrase in the C1 zone is businesses would primarily service highway traffic. You know, that's just awful. So, certainly we want to start listing our uses by the uses that are here. And believe it or not, we don't have a definition for a restaurant in our code. And that's amazing. So, you know, there's certain things that are just fundamental that we really got to address. But that is a good point. The Route 9 corridor study will be a resource that I access that will be looked at and considered for the rezoning and for the new chapter, as will the farmland protection plan. So, yes, Matt? Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sure.
So, reflecting back on your time as zoning administrator in Queensbury, what did you feel about that code up there?
I think it was okay. It had shortcomings as well. You know, I don't know that it particularly dealt with the commercial district very well in terms of the density and intensity of use. And I think it got a little bit away from itself there. And, you know, the town traffic pattern suffered as a result of that. and still does so today even through the factory outlets. They're still trying to find a solution to that. So I think the point that was made about maybe keeping the commercial development in check, so that do we want to, you know, one of the options that we could consider is, do we want to look at the idea of a limit as to the size of a commercial building? You know, maybe an upper limit of, you know, 50,000 square feet, say, or 30,000 square feet. So we have more of a, that will encourage more of a incremental, you know, commercial development pattern, and we won't have a big box. And the check valve on that can always be that we do have some substantial properties, because the other thing we don't want to factor in when we start looking at the individual districts, we'll do this as an exercise. I say we, the planning board and zoning board are going to be constantly involved on this rewrite as we go through it. It's going to be looking at the parcels of whatever district we're working in, and do the parcels physically fit as a technical consideration. You know, for example, we don't want to set up, I've seen some codes that have, you know, very strenuous setbacks for districts that include parcels that are very small in size. So you're just loading your zoning board of appeals agendas with area variances that are always going to be approved. So, you know, we want to make sure we consider parcel sizing and look at the, particularly the commercial district. So, you know, that the check valve can be, we always have a PUD provision. And for those of you who do not understand what that is a planned unit development district. And what a planned unit development is, it is a clause in the regulations that allows for, if certain parameters are met, and we can establish those parameters, it allows for a new district to be brought in that is specifically built for the use that's proposed. So, say we get a, you know, a big mixed-use project on Route 9, that could come in as a PUD, and the use schedule, the dimensional regulations and standards are built specifically for that project, and it has to go through a scrutiny of review with the town board. It starts there, because only the town board can re-legislate, you know, in other words, develop a new district. And then it goes to the planning board as well for site plan review in an advisory capacity, and ultimately for final approval of the site plan. So both boards in tandem work on that PUD, and its review is also subject to CEQA as well, the Environmental Quality Review Act. So that's a possibility. So my point is, if we have, you know, a modest commercial district that maybe has some mixed use on it, maybe has a limitation on building size, if in the event we did get somebody who wanted to accommodate a larger project, they could come in under a PUD, and that's how that project would be accommodated in our code. And the thing I like about that is that specific project is not generically treated in the code. We're looking at it in detail, specifically under the scrutiny of the PUD. And I think that's a much better system, and ultimately turns out for a better project, and it's better for the town. So that's just, you know, some ideas.
Kind of a comment. Yeah. Just going back to what you said about restricting size limitations, or where you get to a spot where you have an area variance, someone seeking dimensional relief, that ultimately would get approved. I personally am kind of in favor of more restrictive code, and let them come before the Zoning Board of Appeals, because, as you know, the Zoning Board of Appeals members' duty is to grant the minimum relief necessary, right?
Well, this is
so, right. So I feel as if, you know, some more control there, and with, you know, I know the Queensbury code is pretty restrictive, but and like you said, most people would get approved, but I think there was a lot of modification at times, and it maintained still a look to that town, where you could see that they were holding on to something that was visible to the public, you know, and I could see us getting to the spot where maybe we should still be maybe a little more restrictive, and maybe we have more, maybe we have to do 2 zoning board meetings a month, you know, maybe so we have some idea really what's happening, because I think as a general, like, we can do whatever we want in the town hall right now, and then that, after they're built, then we have, or projects are in, then we have a little bit more people unhappy. So, you know, from my perspective, I would look to possibly see the thoughts going in that direction.
Okay. And in that regard, the other thing I think that we need to introduce into the commercial district, especially, or into this corridor, is the idea of design guidelines. And that was suggested in the Route 9 plan, for example, that and I like the idea of the term guideline. It is just that. It's not a hard and fast rule, but it is conveying a message to the developers out there and the architects and the people who prepare the site plans. Okay, here's what the community expects. It conveys a certain, character and quality. The old days of, the evil, blood-sucking, profiteering, developer, I think are gone. My experience is most people these days who are developing commercial property want to do the right thing. And they want to adhere to your rules, they want to be a good neighbor, and they want to come in as a community-based business. So they're looking to comply with your code. So if we have the standards in there, as you're suggesting, and the guidelines, I think we can get a better looking corridor over time that we all would like to have. That's our primary commercial corridor and also our gateway. So, yep.
I was going to ask along those same lines, Jim, when we were at the conference in Saratoga, I think it was Half Moon had a unique concept that they rolled forward where they were starting to see a lot of development in key spots of the town, and they created almost like a fund, right, that the developer had to make payments into, depending on the density of the project and how it ultimately configured, so that ultimately when you reach that pinch point as it relates to traffic, that there was a relief valve that the town could access, right? Because we're seeing this at the planning board level and to some degree probably the zoning board, where as we have development after development and we ask for a traffic study each time and then peer review the study, while no one single project has been the straw that broke the camel yet, it's growing, right? And so I'm wondering too, as part of this process, is now when we would look to potentially do something like that under the Unified Development Code, where you establish either by area or by district that the developer would need to make provision for something like that? Because somehow we have to figure that out, right? It's going to keep happening.
What you're talking about is a traffic mitigation fee, mm-hmm. and they also have a similar process in Malta.
Okay.
And my understanding of how those were done is it's not necessarily under the code revision, but it comes after the code revision in the form of a generic environmental impact statement.
Okay, I think you're right.
And so what they do is the town initiates this. They undertake a study of various thresholds, and they assign a monetary value to those impacts based on that study. And the generic environmental impact statement ultimately results in a statement of findings, and that finding statement is the basis for a fee schedule going forward. So that if you are XYZ developer and you want to put in a 15,000 square foot strip center by virtue of that level of development in that area, you owe X dollars to the traffic mitigation fund. And it's much like our recreation fund is now. It builds over time, and it's there. So as traffic improvements need to be made, and there's a local share that's needed for that, and contributed with the state, allocation or whatever, there's monies there to do that. So that's how that comes to be. And I think, to me, the greater concern now is getting the code right. But I do think there's going to come a time where that's going to be appropriate, for Moreau to look into that.
I personally think that needs to be done at the same time because it's already very bad. It's something that we've known about for quite a while. So, mm-hmm. it makes sense. I mean, I don't know, maybe it makes sense to wait until we have the zoning changes, because that can affect it. But I think we should start it now. I mean, it should be something that's...
Well, the reason why I say for the zoning, because the impacts are going to be dealt with on what's allowed, you know, in terms of your regulatory code. We want to make sure our code's up to date so they get an accurate, you know, setting of those impacts that establish those dollar values. So
the other thing that I think is important is it's not just Route 9 and 197. In the densest part of town, where up the northern part, I mean, there's a lot of side streets, there's a lot of small streets, but there's also some feeder streets, some main streets, like Peter Dam Road, William Street, Reservoir Road, Bluebird Road, Nolan Street Road, that are really to feed all these developments. And I think they ought to be looked at as you know, I don't know whether in terms of zoning, but, you know, maybe they should be. Maybe there's the possibility of some local businesses, or, you know, businesses that serve the
right
neighbors. But also improvements to roads. I mean, to designate these feeder roads is important. I mean, they're already de facto designated. Because when the developers come in, they've got to say where the roads, where the traffic's going to be. And it's always Peter Hamburg, right? But it's also, you know, Nolan Road and the Reservoir Road, and, you know, those roads need to be identified too. And your town roads, they're not state roads, but it's important that they be looked at least in terms of the zoning and in terms of the planning too. And I know this is zoning, but it's planning as well.
Exactly. It's in large part that. Anybody have anything else? Yes.
We had an application come in to the planning board for a cell tower, probably in the Ag District. And
yes.
As far as the use variance, I think that's outdated. I think we changed the regs and make it by a special permit townwide. You're seeing a lot now that broadband and wireless basically a public utility. So to zone out that specifically out of, I think it's the R4, you know, if you change the rights and add camouflaging, there's a silo in Saratoga that's functional. So use variance is so arduous, and they obviously probably walked away. I think that's something that should be considered.
Yeah. And by the way, we're taking your recorded minutes of this. I'm going to review them. That's why I'm not really seriously writing things down, because I wasn't sure if somebody would. It's good that you're here. So we can share these minutes among us, is my point. So we can constantly have these as we go through the code. We'll have these to look back upon. So I want to make sure you understand every time it's being recorded, and that's a good thing. Pat?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we should be very sensitive about is that we are essentially a bedroom community. And the reason that people are relocating into our community is because it is a bedroom community, because of our recreational offerings, whether it's at Moreau State Park or the town-owned facilities and the land we own along the river. We have to be sensitive to that. So along with that, I think you have to be careful if we're talking about expanding our commercially zoned areas, especially if they're going to be adjoining, abutting the Ag District. Because the quickest way to start chipping away at an Ag District is to put commercial zoning up against it. And so I think we should focus as we move forward to infill in the areas that we have already designated as our commercial corridor. You know, I've worked very hard, the town board's worked very hard to pull in the last piece of the puzzle for infrastructure, and that was getting sewer in there. So the town's focus should be and will be from the Exit 17 interchange, both sides of the road, nearly up to Butler Road. And so we should be focusing on infilling those areas as well as further north along there, because there will be opportunities to expand the sewer district down the road. Once that area, there's no more room for commercial development, that is the time that future boards should be looking at where we want to modify zoning. But I think it's critically important that we keep in the back of our minds that people are coming here for our bedroom community. And, you know, with that, it requires services. But those services should be down the Route 9 corridor.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, as I go up and down the Route 9 corridor all the time, I see not only open properties, but underutilized properties. So there's a lot of capacity in the current system, if you will, to accommodate, more commercial growth that will, first and foremost, provide the goods and services that the residents want to see, build our tax base in a strong and responsible manner, but not have to sprawl out into the residential or ag areas of the town. So, I think there's a lot of potential, if you will, in that commercial district. We just got to get it right in terms of the regulations as was suggested and the uses that are allowed there. But I think we can get there. I can see it being a very vibrant, responsive commercial district. The infrastructure is coming, so it's just a matter now of getting that regulatory program, in that sweet spot, and I think we can get there. Yeah. So there's enough understanding here in the room to do that.
Yeah, and the comment regarding the possibility of piecemealing it, that is one way to do it, but I can tell you that time is of the essence, because we know that there's going to be a professional building down there by DOT. The land's already been sold. That's going to be a professional building that's going to be multi-stories. I don't know what it is exactly. There's rumors out there what it may be. But that is coming. That will start once the sewer is up and running, which will be fall 2021. Also, north of there, you have the property, which is where the old Boss Drive-In used to be located. The property owner there is going to begin clearing that lot to more actively market it. He wants to meet with me for ideas he has to get in a commercial development in there of some sort, and wants to know, what I think the town will be willing to accept in there. So it's critically important that we have this updated code framework, all this stuff in place before those proposals come before the planning board.
Jim, to the supervisor's point, are we in a situation, or are other townships been faced with this kind of situation where we are right on the cusp of seeing a lot of activity, mm-hmm. and would certain types of development or certain areas, in this case, be candidate for us to have a moratorium until we get this in place? Because I think the last thing we want is to have an opportunity for us to really establish what the future wanted to look like and have a project in the middle of that that complies with our current code but maybe doesn't look like what we want the future to look like.
Right. Moratorium is always a possibility, and I think it's a very effective tool. But I think that's a policy decision. It's really up to the town board as to how they see that. But I got to say, I went to Todd and said, look at the, solar's a real pressure item here. And we're seeing a lot of it, which was concerning to me, in the ag district without, us having nowhere near up-to-date, regulatory program to manage that. So that's why I suggested that, we got to consider a moratorium on that. It's not something that you just willy-nilly do, but the circumstances are right, and I think it was for multifamily and solar, and it could be potentially too for, some. It doesn't need to be town wide; it could be targeted, geographically.
Yeah.
So it could be a targeted location where that kind of thing occurs until we've got our regulations up to, up to modern times and up to speed.
So before I was on the board here in town, I a lot of the discussion about that blue flame propane snare down there. Obviously, we're going to try and not have things like that happen again with what's going on here, and I think it kind of ties in a little bit to what Mr. Zimmerman was saying as well. But I can see projects like that popping up right now all about Lumberman, because I think it's still, there are so many properties for sale, and our code is so wide open. Right. So as a time of the essence piece here, I think it's also, I want to reflect that thought too.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to get on the stick.
And the other thing is, as we look at what's permissible along the commercial corridor, you know, you may want to, you know, set up the code such that, you know, you incentivize having commercial retail type of businesses that are located right off the road, but then you allow for manufacturing something deeper into the lot that's so many feet off the road. I think there's a way for dual purposes to work in the commercial zone that meets the needs of our community that way.
How do you feel about multifamily in the C1 zone?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I don't support it.
No.
Would that be like that?
And the reason that I don't is that if you take the temperature of the community, there's a belief out there that the town, and I think you've reflected this in some of your comments, mm-hmm. that the town has done more than its share to accommodate multifamily development. I think the time has come now that we've gotten all the tools in place for true commercial development to come down the corridor. That's just me.
I agree. Is there some way to limit commercial development to areas that do have the new sewer system rather than areas that are going to be on septic systems?
Well, that actually, I don't want to speak for Jim, but that inherently actually limits what kind of commercial projects you can have, because if you don't have access to a sewer system, you're either going to spend a lot of money on conventional septic, which is going to take up a lot of acreage, which costs money in the commercial corridor, or you won't be able to do the project.
Well, that's Headwater, a perfect example. Mm-hmm. We're getting the project. They want the project done before the sewer, so they used up a lot. They used at least one building lot, if not two,
correct,
for this septic. Mm-hmm. And
they had to put $83,000 in, which could have bought a lot of capacity.
My understanding is they're still going to work on the sewer.
They are.
They're going to abandon that as soon as that sewer is available. So they're going to use septic for about a year.
Yeah, and then that's a big investment for a year.
Right.
Well, you have to find an excuse that might be appropriate in the commercial area. It's something we've seen in downtown Glens Falls, mm-hmm. and Route 9 down in Saratoga, where the first floor is a commercial or professional use, and above there are apartments.
Saratoga Springs also will be
downtown. Well, I mean, I can see both points. You know, and it's going to be just a policy decision about whether the commercial, district has any multifamily in it or not. In my county, for example, down in Glendale, we've had a lot of problems with, mixed-use projects are approved, and the first thing they build is the residential element, and then the commercial never comes. And so now we've gotten to the point where they reworked the code to say, you have to build the commercial element first, and it's required.
So. And the other kind of multifamily, you have affordable housing, you have senior housing.
Right.
I don't know what kind of mix we have in multifamily in this town. I know there are kinds.
We have a very robust range of affordability, I know, and styles too, in terms of duplexes, multiplex, single family, modest, affordable, or single family higher end. I mean,
there is some, they would like to see more affordable housing, and I'm not trying to put them on whatever. That's one of the voices out there that we're not getting enough affordable housing.
I'm
just giving you a point of view.
I think that if you look at the numbers, that as a reality, the numbers are there and support the fact that there's a good range of housing out there across the spectrum of costs. So,
what is the basis for the objection? Is it too much of a drain on the town that impact fees might offset? Or I'm just curious.
I think it's the density in the where there's sewer. There's enough density of people living there that I don't think people want the density.
The only thing I said earlier about what I did about the idea of maybe mixing in some residential is, I just see culturally, I try and stay on top of this stuff, and I see these, I think it's going to be these districts where it's very active, if somebody can you know, maybe walk down the street and work, and on the way home they go to the microbrewery, and then they go back to their apartment, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's where the culture's going. I don't know. The segment of it appears to be a real attraction in commercial areas where you have that true mix. You know, they can get their dry cleaning done, and then go get
it. I've seen it on Wyville Avenue in Saratoga. There, where they tried that, and then behind the main drag, there's a lot of housing because there's sewer. Obviously, there must be sewer there, and that's what I'm seeing.
Well, sewer's are funded up. Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I'm seeing in Saratoga, working and operating stores there, and driving around in Malta and Milton. We have had some construction. Those towns, unbelievable.
Well, Saratoga now, their zoning is very sophisticated. The city, and they have what they call transect zoning, and they actually regulate the building height in zones as you go back from Broadway. You know, and so they've rightfully tried to take advantage of their vertical space because that's all you've got. You know, so I think that's another consideration even here, even in this commercial district. We've really got to consider the idea that, you know, would it be advantageous to allow some vertical height, you know, and not have the horizontal sprawl. So,
what do you foresee in your DOT crystal ball? We get a couple of years on Route 9. Would they turn it into four lane like Glen for Glen?
No, I don't see that.
No.
I think there's a lot of capacity there.
So
Route 9 itself.
Yeah.
Now, I do think there are justifiable concerns when we've gotten into this. You know, what really spurred the moratorium was the UR district, the little piece of it that's here. On those back roads, those collector roads that somebody spoke about, that's where the traffic concern is, and I think it's justified. But Route 9 has got a ton of capacity.
Yeah, except at peak.
Well, I know you're talking about the interchange there, but...
I just mean, like, would they put a roundabout by the speedway? Like, what...
So I'm in regular, I have regular conversations with DOT, the Regional Planning Office had one as recently as 2 weeks ago, just to get an update on what their thought process is, what they're looking to do, and I also sit on the Adirondack, Greater Glens Falls Regional Transportation Council, had a meeting yesterday with them. DOT is there, as are other member of communities and counties. And I can tell you that the bridge has to be replaced over the Northway. It's not structurally unsound yet, but it will be soon. And it doesn't meet federal highway standards. It has to be raised 5 feet. And so as part of that conversation, the way it's spec now, it's with that and the redesign of the interchange, it's about a $6.3 million project, which they have been funded for. But their concern is, in the regular conversations with me, that's not going to solve the current traffic issue that we have. And they're not sure why we have that issue. They're still trying to figure it out. So I've had conversations with them regarding, you know, the possibility of one or two roundabouts, one at Squire Falls, one at 197. And they thought those were great ideas, but they don't have the money for it, and each one costs $3 million. So, and that's where the question came up about impact fees, and they went on to tell me how some communities force developers to pay impact fees, which helps offset their costs and makes the state more amenable to coming in and doing the work if there's a cost sharing involved. Our community can't do that. We're not set up for it. We don't have the development if we wanted to do it just yet. But it's something we should be looking at down the road so that our residents don't have to pay for that. The state's not going to pay for it. The developer should be doing it. But as part of that thought process, there's a recognition by DOT that for the traffic to flow and mitigate all the backups, it's got to be 5 lanes. On Route 9. And as you know, through painting, they have taken it down from 2 lanes, basically, down to 1 lane. In most areas with a turn lane in the middle, so it was actually a three-lane. So there's a lot of thought going into it. Right now, they were talking about doing the redesign, actually the same year that we'd be doing sewer, which is 2021. But now, the earliest they'd be doing a redesign is 2022. But if we, you know, if we haven't got all the traffic issues figured out, I think that, you know, they will wait until there's a workable solution, because they only want to do it once. So, to answer your question, there's a lot of conversation going on. I'm going to be meeting with DOT here over the next 2 weeks, just to voice my concerns and the problems as I see it, and to articulate, you know, the potential projects that may be coming to the Ninth Ward. We had one project that we were very close in having here. Unfortunately, we were in the top two. We didn't get it. But it would have put a million square foot building in on Route 9. It would have been a distribution center with 150 trucks coming and going every day, 200 jobs, and the building itself would have been a $100 million building. So, you know, people are looking at the corridor, and so we have to plan accordingly and make sure that we have the ability, whatever we move forward with, to handle whatever may come based on our zoning.
Did multitudes, like, across from the town hall, all those new developments, are those all PUDs there that have been mixed?
Yes, everything in Malta, especially during that time, was PUD.
Yeah.
They did almost everything.
Because I feel like any residential on Route 9 would become an oasis. Like, that's all they're going to be, is they're on site, because it's always going to be too busy and too much volume to be anything but that. I mean, do we want that?
I guess, from my opinion, you know, it's not a good idea for the multifamily. So, I mean, that's fine. That's just an idea. Can't hear it.
Yeah, you know, just in terms of, I think I listened to the game about piecemeal. I know there's kind of a, you know, we don't want to do this piecemeal, but, you know, when I listened to Todd talk about, well, we've got to get this done, well, it would seem to me that it makes sense to say this is urgent and this is somewhat less urgent. And be able to say, well, that commercial corridor. Well, that's probably that, and maybe some of the things in the social protection, the ag districts, are more important than some of these other.
It can be done. It can be done in a minor way.
It's not saying we're not going to do the rest of the zone, but we're going to do it in phase. It makes sense to me to try to do, to identify the most important things and get them before the board and get that zone approved. The other thing I think about it in terms of, you know, moving northward on that corridor, there, you reach a point, I know the road will burn up that way, where that's north of that is really residential.
Right.
And very attractive residential. You talk about this being a bedroom community. You know, we got our bedroom community down in the south of the northway. They get great big houses, but we also have some beautiful lots, you know, off the reservoir road, and even in the smaller lots, some very attractive residential communities, and I think that's important too. But then you go further north to the very end of Route 9 before the village starts. We've got a little corridor, a little space there that should be more commercial. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to kind of segment.
And they attempted to do that, because at some point, yeah, the great point is Lincoln Avenue for the C3 district in the C1. And C3 was trying to do that, I think, but it just, it's not, you know.
C3 is Silver Street.
Right.
It's just professionals.
Yeah.
And we didn't actually mean that end of the Route 9 is not professional. We're a hairdresser, no
profession.
Right. You know, it is commercial.
Yeah.
So
but of more service nature.
Yeah, a different kind of commercial. Yeah. C1, we can be C2.
Right.
Just that maybe change, keep the ball moving. What we've seen recently is shared driveways,
yes.
and maybe what we've tried to do as a planning board is maybe in the new zoning is when there is maybe have specs for the road, uniform. So when somebody wants to put a shared driveway, they already know what they need to do, and also the agreement of maintaining the road.
Correct.
Those are a couple of things I saw that I think move forward.
Yeah, well, as a practical matter, as a planning board, you've tried to do that, but.
It should be
clarified
for the developer to know firsthand, if you want to do this, here's what you need to expect to do.
Right.
Next thing would be, is sunset laws. That was something that we've seen. There's projects out there that are 25 years old, 27 years old, that are still there. I'd like to see. I would like to see maybe when we do create the new code, have regulations that will send registered letters to these projects. You now have X amount of years. Don't say you can't do it, but you have so much time.
What you're talking about is it's called an amortization period.
Sure.
Yes.
And this, so that eventually either you do this project or
it
you don't.
It reverts back.
And it reverts back, and so either. So that the things have changed.
That's an easy fix. It's something we need. The sunset clause will be in the next code for site plan review. And we even could consider the idea of the amortization period for those that were approved under the old code, and they just can't be forever.
When I went through the code book in each of the sections, and even if you hit it on lightly, it's just better, more descriptive, more definitions need to be in that, or have a spot where you go into Merriam-Webster's dictionary, and we're using that as our
fallback
kind of thing.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. All the definitions need to be looked at. There's not enough of them. And if there is a use listed, it needs to be defined. So every use listed needs a definition. And right now, that doesn't exist. So
the issue of shared driveways was just brought up. And I think there's a lot of issues that go along with that. But from a zoning standpoint, I actually believe that they should not even be permitted at a minimum in the Ag District. And the reason for that, there's no quicker way to gobble up acreage than in a development, is to allow for shared driveways. And I can point to developments that have come in and isolated some farm parcels that, like, overnight as a result of. And I don't know how we got to doing that, because we never used to allow shared driveways. It's only something that has come along in the past several years. But, you know, either. I just think at a minimum they shouldn't be permitted in the Ag District.
Okay. Anything else? Well, we did pretty well. 1 hour and 15 minutes. Anything else at all? Because I want. Okay, so we're going to start. I'm going to start on the revisions. It'll be done like we did with the comp plan. We'll be doing it on a monthly basis with the zoning board and planning board. You know, providing oversight. I'll make regular updates to the town board as to progress. And like I said, within a year or so, I think we can get this done. If the, you know, consensus is to do a more targeted approach and advance certain sections and get them up to the town board for their consideration right away, we can do that. You know, if we want to look at a C-zone, that type of thing, and do it in a targeted way, we can do that.
Jim, maybe it might be helpful just to remind the public that there are periodic toll gates or checkpoints where you share updates and solicit feedback as well, right?
Yes. This will be, the first in a series of these types of workshops, like Rod indicated, just update on status. I try and do it through the town board at their regular meetings. It will be discussed at the public meetings of the planning board and the zoning board. Every one of these things is public. It has to be. It needs to be. This will be a very much on top of the table type of a discussion. And I welcome comments, thoughts, observations, because we want to make sure what we ultimately end up with serves the needs of the residents. That's what we're after. So that's fundamental.
Just one thing that didn't come up this evening, of course, we've all heard it. It's very important because if you go campaigning door to door, I hear it every time I'm campaigning for the past 18 years, is the appearance of our commercial corridor. When you come in off the Northway. So one of the things I think our code should provide for throughout that area is some sort of requirements for how facades should look, what's acceptable, what isn't, so that whatever's behind the front of the building, that's one thing, but when you drive down that road, that's the gateway to our community. We want to send the right message to
that. In that regard, how do you feel about, one of the things I'd like to float is the idea of no parking in the front yards for to the commercial district.
Was that what you were starting to touch on?
With the design guidelines, yes. So parking would only be allowed in the side or the rear. So that dedicates the front to landscaping.
Landscape
plan. I mean, you can certainly look to architecture and all that, but there'd be no parking in the front yard.
Would you make sidewalks?
Oh, yeah, it'd be required. Yep.
One of the things in Saratoga.
Multi-use path.
One of the city of Saratoga then is certain areas have minimum height requirements so that you're not having, they wouldn't want a strip mall, so they make that the front has to be 38 feet high or at least two stories high, even though you might not use that second, so you don't get the appearance of a strip mall type thing. You've got more of a two-floor, three-floor looking. A lot of that's been done in the city of Saratoga, but that's what I see. They don't necessarily use the second or third floor, but the facade is taller, gives it a more. Well, I'm just
freaking out. I think we got to be careful. I think everybody wants a tasteful, you know, welcoming, attractive, you know, commercial corridor. But I got to tell you, my honest opinion about that thing in Malta across from the town hall, I think it's contrived. It's forced. No, I think it's kind of silly. You know, they all of a sudden you got this urban design in a suburban township. It just, what's that? You know, it's, I don't know. I think we can have a balance, is my point. You know,
same problem here. We got 45 miles on. So mixed use is tough in that Route 9 corridor. It sounds bad, but it works, but not until you get up to where 30 mile an hour zone.
The biggest concern I have about the requirement for parking in the back homes, especially on the Route 9 corridor heading north, left hand side between the transfer station up to Nolan Road, you don't have very much depth in those lots with that time.
So I'm not saying the whole route. I'm not saying.
So there'd be some. We have to be looking at clearly reducing the setbacks in that.
Yep.
Those lots are. There's some lots.
Yes, they're smaller type. Yep. 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 Those are all things we'll look at and take into consideration. Yes,
we. If we're going to put parking in the back, we need to do something about connectivity because there's nothing more frustrating. You know, they're telling you the. In front of the Walmart, and you go in here, and you got to come all the way out and go in there. It's not easy. It's frustrating for the driver, and it's not easy movement through the area. So
and that can also do a lot. That connectivity can also do a lot to keep your traffic concerns on your.
Well, that's what you're saying, like Wilton, where the Walmart's back, and you've got a lot of that feeder road between Lowe's and all the things. Is that something what she's trying to...
Yes, that's what she's talking about.
Well, it doesn't even have to be that extensive. It could just be connected
just
to
the driveway.
So that you can pull behind...
There's brakes in the curb line.
And then pull back out to the road and continue down and not have everything broke up.
Yes.
I was just saying, that's part of the thing, too. We already do something with that corridor and having a design commission. That's something some cities have been switching over to, where the old days of big yellow green, you can get the parking lot in front, the drainage a mile back. Bring those buildings to the front, keep parking.
That's my point.
Down that corridor, you're looking at a nice building set up.
And I understand what I'm saying when I'm saying the parking on the side. I understand the retailer's desire to have the parking in the front, and the side does accommodate that. I've seen that work. So... All right. Anything else? All right. Well, thank you all, and there'll be more to follow, sure.